good at?
Luke Willis-Thompson is a Fijian New Zealand artist currently based in Taumaki. His politically geared practice circulates various mediums that are often conceptually driven, working amongst moving image, photography, performance, installation and sculpture as modes of exploration. His current solo exhibition at Nutukaka Gallery B42040A1A1A presents two major moving image works, Whakamoemoea and Soro. Each work utilizes this visual language of political theater to imagine a decolonial future for Aotearoa. This exhibition includes the first presentation of Whakamoemoea in Aotearoa since its first viewing at the Sharjah Biennial. The work is set in 2040, centres a powerful address in Te Reo Māori on the Waitangi grounds by recognised broadcaster, journalist and politician Orini Kaipara. The second work shown within this exhibition, Soro, envisions a reenactment of the 2021 Dawn Raids apology, set 10 years on from the former Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern's apology, where an unnamed Prime Minister delivers the speech out of frame with the camera solely focused on recognised NZSL interpreter Alan Wendt. I caught up with Luke about the show and overall practice.
Kia ora katoa katoa, Nisa Bulivinaka. My name is Luke Willis-Thompson and I'm an artist and I live here in Taumaki. My practice touches on a wide range of things, but I think it's safe to say I try to make work that is politically geared with a kind of philosophical bend to it. I've come to prominence for making films, and the show that I have on now is moving image, but I also make performances and photographs and sculpture and conceptual work too.
Mm. And your current solo exhibition showing at Nutukaka Gallery titled B42040A1A1A presents an installation of two major moving image works by you, Whakamoemoea and Soro. Both of these works position themselves in this place of looking forwards, with each work imagining a decolonial future for Aotearoa. I wanted to start this conversation surrounding these works by speaking to this idea of the imagined future. What influenced you into this mode of looking into the future as a method or like mode for approaching and accessing a work?
The kind of future orientation, I think it really came, I think, out of that sort of major disruption to the future that we experienced during COVID. I sort of, the seeds to Whakamoemoea were born during lockdown in London and in 2020. And I was desperate to come back to Aotearoa. I couldn't. But at the same time, my experience of COVID wasn't bad. I lived in a block where we tried to organize to bring groceries for the older folks, and it was a mix of, you know, black and cockney and gentrifiers like myself, and we kind of came together because we couldn't let each other kind of deal with life alone, funerals and things like that. And there was something quite beautiful and socialistic about this project, and so I was kind of trapped in a present, you might say. And somewhere in long that time, I came across Matiki Mai Aotearoa, which is the report that Moana Jackson and his working group wrote after being commissioned by Margaret Mutu to consider like what a written constitution would be for Aotearoa and what it would mean to what could be a written constitution was the assignment. And what this working group did, of course, was to hold hui all over the country, I think 273 from memory, and I think another 78 ranga tahi hui, but those numbers could very well be wrong. And they were a mess, really, you know, over 300. And from this process, a document was made, and a readily available document. And that document thinks about a constitutional transformation. So not a new constitution, but a kind of great sort of, you know, I don't know, transformation, I think, not just politically, but in all spheres of life. It's a very beautiful emancipatory document. And Moana was asked somewhere along the line, you know, when do you think the first legislative steps should occur? And he said 2040, which is the, you know, obviously the 200th anniversary of the signing of Te Tiriti. I just sort of, that just got me thinking, like, what would it be if rather than just the first step, that was when we kind of accelerated, like, straight to this day of liberation, or straight to the to the revolution. And I just kind of, like, began to feel like that opened up, you know, avenues that we could approach these questions of things like Indigenous governance and Māori sovereignty from a slightly different angle if we, you know, envision them from the future. Mm. And the whole time, the writings of Dion Brand were sort of guiding me. And I really feel like these lines kind of sum up my what the films are trying to achieve to a certain degree. Brand writes, "Revolutions happen in the vein. They change you and you change yourself. You wake up in the morning changing. You say, this is the human being I want to be. You are making yourself for the future."
Beautiful. And I wanted to speak a bit about this choice of, because you are a multidisciplinary artist, the specific choice of choosing moving image as the mode for exploration for these works. What about that specific medium, kind of, what does it offer these ideas and allows you to do with the work?
I think, you know, the kind of, like, visuality of moving image, it serves so many different purposes, but in these works particular, what sort of, the sort of influences were, you know, things like Leon Narby and Elam graduates or recent graduates going to film the land marches, and things like citizen journalism and cell phone journalism, and things like, you know, public cable television in America, where a lot of native television shows were produced and kind of radical black content was aired to the masses. And I guess I just started to see that this thing that had been, you know, haunting our living rooms when we were children might still have a kind of strange anachronistic potential. So I wasn't thinking cinema, and I wasn't thinking, you know, like, durational experiential art film. I was thinking, like, what are the most democratic, lowbrow even sources to draw from where, you know, the message is prioritized and the beauty is a kind of byproduct.
Yeah. And this exhibition includes the first presentation of Whakamoemoea in Aotearoa since its first viewing at the Sharjah Biennial. The work is set in 2040, centres around this powerful address in Te Reo Māori on the Waitangi grounds by recognised broadcaster, journalist and politician Orini Kaipara. Do you want to speak a bit about this work and, yeah, ideas held within it?
I think it's an introduction to Mā Tiki Mai, and I think it's safe to say it's a solid introduction. I think if you're really already up on this kaupapa, then you might be looking at it for a different, you might be looking at it differently or looking for something different in it. But it's also kind of, I think, about educating the audience to some degree and really making sure that you can come in with no knowledge and you can be walked through an experience, a kind of experience of, like, hearing how it could be. And I suppose the hope is for my audience that they believe that's how it would be, that the fiction of the work does, you know, does its magic to break that down, the the work has a kind of arc. So the first half of the film, Orini really tells the story of, in very uncertain terms, what colonization did to Māori and the almost unlanguageable injustice of it. And there is, you know, a beautiful pau, and it brings questions of, I suppose, the right to talk about that pain, or why to talk, why that sort of great pain is addressed. And then in the middle, there is a kind of roll call, and it goes through the kinds of political heroes and leaders from the beginning right through the 20th century. And then the second half begins, and this veers in a totally different direction and thinks about restoration. It floats socialistic principles like the need or the desire that we live in a world where things are shared equally, that the benefits of living are shared equally.
Mm.
And it describes one model, and Matiki Mai Aotearoa has many models that one could explore, but it explains the bicameral model, which is that you would have a kawangatanga sphere which would operate, could just operate as a liberal democracy, and that's how non-Māori would be governed, much the same as we are now. And then, or most people are now, the question of Pacific people is an open one, actually.
Mm.
And then on the other side, you would have the rangatiratanga sphere. And in that sphere, Māori would govern themselves through their iwi and hapu. And a fundamental principle would be that the kawangatanga sphere could not impose governance on the rangatiratanga sphere. So it is a platform where these two spheres have parliamentary sovereignty. They can't dictate.
Mm.
And what has to happen is a kind of working out through a kind of consensual democracy process. So it explores this notion of an indigenous future and political future. I think of a film as a political sci-fi film, political science fiction film.
Yeah, and the second work shown within this exhibition, Sorrow, envisions a reenactment of the 2021 Dawn Raids apology, set 10 years on from the former Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern's apology, where an unnamed Prime Minister delivers a speech out of frame, the camera instead focused on Recognise New Zealand SL interpreter Alan Wend. Would you like to speak a bit to this work and its contexts?
Yeah, the second film came about in a sort of roundabout way because I was the recipient of a commission called the New Dawn Funding Initiative, which actually came out of the earmarked money from Jacinda Ardern's Dawn Raid apology. So in effect, this film comes out of the kind of reparation that was offered to the Pacific community. And I went for that funding because my father lived through that period, was arrested multiple times in that period, and the Dawn Raids left a kind of mark, a kind of trauma on him. And it was something we knew about as children, but only with the scantest detail. And my father isn't alive, and many people from that time are not. And so there are still these kinds of open questions about it, right? Like I don't think every stone has been turned over. And so I was awarded this money to make a work, and I initially really kind of was choking on this commission. And that was partially because what I couldn't get over was the scale of the kind of way that whole neighborhoods were dispossessed, right? Like, you know, if you think about Operation Pot Black, you're talking about mass arrests, and then these communities are so heavily gentrified,
yeah.
And Grey Lynn, Ponsonby, etc. And I was just finding this question of what is that worth, right? Like, who benefits from that type of police brutality, right? Someone always benefits from police brutality. It's awful to say that, but, you know, we know very clearly that the property values of areas where black motorists are killed tend to go up, things like that. And so I was asking these kinds of questions during my initial research, and I was told off, you might say. And someone said, you know, Luke, we've already done the ifonga. The apology has been accepted. You know, it's time to focus on the healing. Mm. And I thought, but I'm not healed. I'm not fixed, you know. Mm. And so in a way, where this work merges from is this attempt to think the economics and then to kind of wrestle with that. And so basically, you know, Jacinda Ardern's Dawn Raid apology, for as important it was to the Pacific community, it's important, I do acknowledge that, I feel it too, but as a state apology, but its economic package, we're talking $2 million, around about, or $2 or $3 million. The event itself probably cost, you know, almost as much as what was offered. And that is not enough money to repair Pacific life in this country.
Mm.
And we, New Zealand, still has an incredibly colonial relationship to the Pacific at large. It is as if New Zealand is content for the rest of the Pacific to be the wretched of the earth. And so what Soro does is it begins reenacting Jacinda's apology. The first, you know, two stanzas come directly from her apology. And then it kind of veers off, and it starts to think about what if we had an infinite amount of money, and if we re-engineered our political system towards Matiki Mai and towards Māori sovereignty, then what might the relationships be across the Pacific that were no longer bound on the kind of colonial schema or regime that is laid across it? And so it thinks these relationships, it thinks about recognizing the statehood of West Papua, it thinks about, you know, free travel or visa-less travel, it questions how our economy could actually improve through, you know, through a kind of United States of the Pacific or a kind of Pacifica Union.
Mm. And both of these works that you're speaking about and that are in this exhibition center around a public address, each offering an alternative method of address to one another. Whakamoemoea holding viewers in direct eyeline with the speaker, while Soro offers a slight shift in address with the camera's sole focus on the interpreter, with audiences never hearing or seeing the actual speaker of the address. I wanted to ask about these decisions on centering versus decentering the speaker. How does the shift in forms of address translate to the ideas and experience of these works?
With Whakamoemoea, we took a long time to decide who Orini was playing, because I could see this image of her as this, you know, she is such an incredible speaker. I'm so proud of the work she is doing in the house today. When she graced our televisions, she was so precise and so direct. And so in a way, it felt right at a visual level or intuitive level before we knew actually who she was playing. And that was a source, you know, she was really on my case to figure out who she was playing. And it became clear, okay, you're playing yourself, because of who you were in the history of media, you know, because she's the first Wahine to wear a moko kawai or to have a moko kawai on to read the six o'clock news, which I think was already futuristic. You know, I was so it was It's quite something for me to see that when I did back in 21 on Christmas Day. And she's been given this honour by the Rangatiratanga Congress for that moment. And so we wanted it, like me and my team of Tuneel, Aratini, Waratini and Jim Spears, we wanted it a bit kind of glitchy, a bit like a news, some cross between a news footage or a kind of state broadcast, but it's for a kind of mediated, it's for this hyper-mediated digital space. So you could imagine that clips of it would be cut and would kind of go viral and move, and so it didn't quite matter that its flow had a kind of visual staccato a look. And I think that added to its dreamlike nature. You know, like there's something about the way she almost jumps in the frame that she is sort of time traveling within the narrative arc of the story. And then Sora is kind of completely different because, of course, Alan Wentz was not just Jacinda Ardern's sign interpreter, but a favorite, you know, a kind of favored sign interpreter. He is incredible at his job. And he was present all through COVID as well. So there is that COVID connection. And who is giving this address is a kind of composite of a prime minister. You know, it breaks into me. I guess at some point it's a little bit me talking about my father. For at least the last three stanzas, it's just Moana Jackson's text. Mm. There is a lot of Dion Brand in there. I co-wrote the work with lawyer Dylan Asafo, and so it has both a kind of legalistic background language, and it also moves into the kind of poetic register that I like to write and think in. And you know, there is this other flip, right? Like Whakamoemoea is a dream, a dreaming process, or a collective dreaming, or a reason to dream, and Soro is an address in the Isoro in Fijian life is your personal accounting for your wrongdoing within a Fijian traditional justice system. And I think of the film, I think of Alan in this black and white 35mm kind of quite smoky, haunting light as sort of like that is taking place within a soul, you know? So there's a kind of like one film is taking place in a dream and one is kind of occurring within your interior. And I hope I hope for Pacific audiences there is that feeling, you know, we wrestle with this and we wrestle with these questions and we wrestle whether anything productive can come from them.
And lastly, I wanted to ask, what is important about these works and their ideas for contemporary audiences now? What about the world today, especially here in Aotearoa, would benefit from experiencing these works?
I make these works because I believe they will happen, and I make them to happen. And Mā Tiki Mai is the just and correct way for this country to go. And I think it is unfashionable to say, but I hope these works assist in the revolution.
That was Luke Willis Thompson speaking to me about his current exhibition at Nutukaka Gallery, B42040A1A1A. The show is on until the 13th of March, so be sure to go and check that one out.